Welcome back to Knox in Nature, the podcast about archery, hunting, hiking, conservation, firearms, and whatever else you feel like talking about. It is episode 26, and we are officially, when this episode releases, we will be one day away from our official one-year Knox in Nature anniversary, which is pretty exciting. So our first episode came out July 19th of last year, and this is going to be released on the 18th. So that's pretty sweet.
It is pretty sweet. We almost made it.
Almost?
Almost.
Woo.
Jared's like, woo.
I can't hear him.
Yeah, that, I think that got messed up. No.
Did it? Uh-oh, Pascadio.
Hold on, I can fix this. Oh, wait. There we go. Jared, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm proud of us. Made it this far and actually stuck with it. So I have to say I had my doubts at first, but...
What?
I kind of figured it would peter off once if we didn't get a lot of followers, but we stuck with it.
Even though we don't have a lot of followers, we still like to talk to ourselves.
That's right.
Yeah. And to our loyal, you know, 40 people or whatever that listen on a regular basis, we appreciate you.
Yep.
Appreciate you sticking around.
And, you know, we just like to get hyped up about our logo and merch and stuff. So.
Yeah. I mean, there's all that too. So
I gave a sticker to Jeff, or two stickers to Jeff yesterday. And I was like, hey, like, we mostly talk about compound stuff, like some hunting and whatever, but, you know, he's a trad only dude. But I was like, the sticker's cool. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's a sick sticker.
Yeah, 100%. We should get into that, too, like what you plan on doing, because it'll be all over by the time. Not that Colt's going to be listening to the podcast, but like.
You never know.
You never know. Maybe his mom's listening to it in the car, and, you know, I don't know. Or if your sister's listening to it,
weird.
Whatever. Right. So, yeah. I'm not like a crazy super celebration by any means, but worth noting. I think it's pretty cool. We're a year into it, so it went by fast. We do have some cool stuff in the works, trying to plan some cool guests and stuff. I know we've mentioned that before. It's kind of difficult to get scheduling right and whatnot, but we'll get on top of that and try to set some stuff up. The three of us will just have to be flexible with our schedules probably to make that work. So as far as what's going on right now, Justin and I did a little scouting before this recording. So we were out on some state land. Found one spot that we actually both thought was going to be pretty freaking sweet. And by the time we got out there, it was basically just a pond and marshy and whatever. But there's some cool parts to it.
It's got potential.
It does have potential.
It's got potential. We'll have to see what it looks like in season. I think it's worth at least a sit or two.
Yeah, especially if there's a lot of pressure in like the surrounding areas.
Mm-hmm.
If we can sneak in there, I feel like we have a good opportunity to get on a bigger deer, especially like I'm thinking, you know, like rifle season, I would want to sneak in there with my bow. I don't know that I'd take a rifle in there just because it's not, you don't need a rifle. I'd rather shoot my bow.
Yeah.
But,
there's no far shots in there.
No. What would you say? Maybe 30?
Yeah.
Maybe.
That'd be max. Maybe in some of those little clearings or whatever, you might be able to
looking down the
it,
trail.
But
yeah. Most of the time, like trad range, like 15, 12 yards.
That'd be a good handgun spot.
That would be a good handgun spot for sure. That'd be really cool. Yeah. Maybe that's what I would do.
Right.
Bring my bow and the handgun. Yeah, that'd be sweet. That's the hard part. Like we found acorns, red oaks, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which I just, it's hard because like you said, later season, they'll be hitting them.
Mm-hmm.
But also if we just have like a bad acorn crop from the white oaks, they'll be hitting the red oaks earlier on.
Right.
So.
And if we get like a super rainy September, or
was pushing everything off.
Early October, it might be all right.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of my other feeling about it is it's really not a early season area.
Probably not.
So
it'd probably be a good late October to early November.
Honestly, yeah. Like a pre-rut as they're dispersing and breaking up bachelor squads. Yeah, 100%. That's a good point. Because everyone's just going to be kind of branching out and whatever. We did find a couple rubs in there. So that one potential, maybe a scrape.
Scrape.
Probably. It was so thick. Like, just to put it into perspective for people, we found like a couple of trails because there was like some old two tracks or like that one I think was an old logging road.
Mm-hmm.
But most of what we were walking through, especially in the beginning, was like maybe a game trail. It looked like, you know, there was some activity. We did find some tracks and everything, but you're walking through ferns and you can't see your feet. Like you're just plowing through vegetation, which is also going to make it hard come season. Like, I agree with you. It'll be way easier to hunt when there's snow on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can actually walk through there and you'll see trails.
Right.
Early season's going to look like it does now. And there's just no way to slip in there.
Yeah, I think we need to find a different spot for early season. You know, first week of October.
Yeah.
We need to find something 100%. Else for that. But
I think that's kind of where I'm at is like, I want to do some more public land stuff just because it's all in your control. Like you get out of public land what you put into it. So if you put in a bunch of work to scout, not necessarily one area because one area might just be a bad area.
Right.
But if you put in the work to scout a bunch of different areas and find a couple spots that are promising or whatever, you're going to get better chances. And on an area like that, like, let's say we don't visit that again until the season, and one of us slips in there, you know, November 6th, and we slip in there and shoot a doe. Like, that's a win.
Oh, yeah.
That's a win.
I'm all for shooting does.
And just to go to a spot like that, I think, is the romance of it, is you're in a spot where not necessarily no one else has been, but, it, like, there's not a lot of people go into that spot, that area.
Yeah.
And you've never been there before.
Mm-mm.
So then you're trying to outsmart the animal and it lives there, you know, or
right.
That's its own world. That's the cool part for me. But I definitely want to do some more state land, public land stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be sweet. You know, just like we did today, you know, next time we record or whatever, just go out and pick another section.
100%.
Yeah. You know, but we just got to find some spots on Onyx or whatever and get some stuff planned out.
I want to get over like Otsego County.
Yeah.
I want to get out there
mm-hmm.
and look at that. I just have a feeling that that's a better deer area because there's so much ag. I feel like we'll get on like that'll be better for bucks than around here because there's like swamps.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot around here.
Not a lot of egg.
No.
Kokaska.
No. But I don't know.
Get all the hippie deer.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Stoner deer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't leave their beds.
They don't leave their beds. That's right. From the looks of it today, they did not leave their beds. It was really hot.
Yeah.
But we didn't see any deer.
No.
So. Saw some squirrels and birds and an owl or a hawk, whatever that was.
Yeah, it was something. I
didn't
really
even
tell.
See it, but
it was cool.
Birds of prey are cool.
Oh, period. Yeah. Dude, I love watching hawks and stuff.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
It is sweet.
So, a bit of a bird watcher.
Bit of a bird watcher myself. Jared,
you been watching any birds out there, Jared?
There's not a lot of public land down by you, right?
Not a lot of public land. Like there's the military base has public use areas.
Yep.
But I think you still have to like pull permits just to go out there. And it's usually like it'll last you for a year, but I haven't really looked into it a whole lot. I know Brooke could speak more onto it, but I know if you're gonna go onto like some of the main like more popular areas that I've, at least the little knowledge that I have about it, I think some of them are actually on the base where you have to get a visitor pass and whatnot, and it's just a headache. But I guess for me, it's not really anymore now that I have a military ID and whatnot. But as far as like for your average person,
right?
But
does that I mean, is there like a whitetail population there that you could even have an opportunity to hunt at, or are you just, I guess, like what's in that those areas on base?
Well, there's a pretty good sized lake. I know Belton Lake is technically owned by Fort Hood. It's like I want to say it's like $5 for the day per vehicle to go use that, but that's more of like a recreational lake. There are people that go fishing there. But as far as like some smaller stocked ponds that are closer to like what you would consider the actual base, you know, that's where Brooke and some of the other guys went fishing and where I'm supposed to go fishing at some point. We'll see. But I do know there was, when we first moved down here, there was actually a seminar thing or something that Brooke went to, and they were asking everyone, you know, hey, how many of you guys or your spouses hunt or fish? So they kind of went over the details on that. I would just have to look into everything again, kind of to be able to speak on it accurately. But I do know you can hunt and fish on the base.
That's pretty cool. I think that would be a cool opportunity. It'd be so different than like anything that any of us, I think, have experienced, because number one, it's not Michigan whitetail, right?
Yep.
And number two, just from an access standpoint, because you have to have the permits or the clearance to be able to go do that, you know. What's the drink of choice today, Jared?
Widowmaker.
Okay. Still banging through Widowmaker.
Yeah, I got 7 left.
All right. There you go.
Getting down there.
Oh, yeah.
He's saving them every time we record.
Yeah. No, we blew through the last of the Bapples Friday night. So that was fun.
I still got like 12 of them at my house. Yeah. I'll ship them to you.
Sounds good. Ship me some KBC as well.
Yeah. I wonder, you can't fly with any of that stuff. That sucks.
Yeah. You can't check it?
I think you can check like bottles of liquor. I don't know, but I would assume you can do beer. But
you throw a case of beer in your check bag, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, you're overweight, you know.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Whatever.
Open up your suitcase, there's just a couple of 30 racks.
Yeah, literally. Yep. That'd be funny.
I know I definitely don't have a whole lot to speak about as far as outdoor stuff lately, just because of all the rain we've been getting. It's kind of made it hard to go outside and enjoy the outdoors, but I don't know. Luckily, we weren't affected by any of that.
Yeah, that's good. There was a lot of like crazy flooding stuff lately.
Oh yeah, it got, I don't know the exact number, but I think it was 27 or 37 feet high floodwaters.
Wow,
that's crazy.
Kerrville. But luckily, that's quite a ways away from us. I do know the base. The actual base flooded up around here because Colleen did get some pretty good rain, but luckily where we're at, I think it's probably just up a little bit higher. So, but I do know the base got some bad flooding.
Are you guys, is your living space, like your apartment or whatever, is that a single story?
Yeah, everything's flat right on the ground. Nothing's raised up.
Gotcha.
But
yeah, that was because that when my sister was in, they had their apartment, I don't remember if it was right before. Anyway, at some point that during a heavy rainfall, those ground floor levels or whatever, they had like standing water in the garages and stuff because of the this like so heavy rainfall. But yeah. She's on the third floor, so she's like, whatever.
Right.
We're also pretty lucky just where we're at, being a, you know, a housing community. It's got all the backyards have drains in them because it's Texas, and, you know, all the drives or whatever, the road, I guess if you want to call it that, they all have pretty good drainage. So, and it all goes down into a big drain culvert kind of on the back side of the property, and then that flows into a river.
Collecting pond deal.
Yeah. Whatever. And that's all, it sits quite a bit lower than us. I mean, not 27 feet lower, but we also didn't get nearly the amount of rain that Kerrville and the surrounding areas got. So I don't know. Did you guys hear about any of that or not really?
Well, I heard about some of it, and we had a week where we had some rainfall, but it wasn't that bad.
There was like, I think over 100 people died from the floods.
That's crazy, dude.
There's a huge number of young girls that were at a summer camp, and they all got washed away.
Yeah, I did hear that. That was really sad.
Yeah. Some of them survived, but a lot of them didn't. It's pretty much presumed anyone still missing at this point is dead.
Right.
I mean, I've seen videos of the floods. It's just insane, the amount of water flowing around. And then the other thing is the aftermath. You look at some of the pictures of like trees, and they've got bark stripped away, and it's like, it's just hard to imagine the water was even that high, because it's insane. It's 27 feet up in the air, and there's bark stripped off the tree.
It's like, it's hard to even imagine that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That would cover houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would like literally, like, that's double the height that like I hunt at.
Yeah.
You know, that's insane.
And there was one, I was looking at a picture of this truck. It was flipped over on its side. And the only reason you could tell that is because you can see this window, but the whole thing is completely buried in the gravel. Like the,
that's insane.
The river rock. It's just, I don't know, crazy.
I did see one video. I guess this is a funny portion because it didn't involve anyone getting hurt, but there was a Yeti cooler.
Oh, yeah.
That was floating down, and it was just getting tumbled.
This is the Yeti ad.
And it was like caught up. Yeah, it was just getting like caught up in the, and it's just spinning. And somebody just put "Built for the Wild" and like tagged Yeti or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's gonna Yeti, like in like Yeti 5 years
have
once
to make their ads, they make themselves.
No, yeah, in like 5 years when everything's calmed down from that, that'll be, people don't put two and two together from where that's from. Somebody will pull that. They're like, oh, look at this.
Yeah. No,
so
those, and then they just, to twist the knife, they actually just got more flood this morning over last night. Flooded again. Really? Yeah.
That's terrible.
But
I mean, at that, like, you're just talking about millions, if not billions of dollars worth of damage. 37 or even 27, 20 feet.
Yeah.
If it's 20 feet, well, your house, right, is because so much water damage.
If it goes through your house, like, your house is toast.
Your house is done.
It's like,
yeah. Well, it was,
it's not like it's going through and then it's not there. You know, it's not like it takes 5 minutes.
Yeah, like
people's houses are probably still submerged in water.
Right. Yeah. Well, and Brooke was telling me about Hurricane Harvey when she was down here in Houston, and you go through those big highway interchanges and whatnot that Texas is kind of famous for, where they've got like five layers of bridges and basically just a big old stack of roads twisting all over the place.
The old concrete jungle.
Yeah, and you look at them, and they've got water markers on them going up the columns, and you can see, you know, like way up at the top is where those, you know, 27-37 feet are. And she, you know, she was even telling me, because I was driving my brother down to the airport in Austin, and there's some of that, those interchanges on the way there, and we're going over one of the top ones, and she's like, now imagine just like being able to jump into the water right there. And the water
that's
is like
insane.
Right next to you. That's how high it was.
That's insane, dude.
It's like, I can't even imagine that. It just seems like the whole state would be flooded, but, you know, not the case.
Yeah. That's insane, dude. So much water. And like, we're surrounded by water.
Yeah.
And I've never had like,
I mean, imagine if the bay rose
20 feet.
Yeah, 20 feet.
Yeah, we'd all be screwed.
Yeah, it wouldn't be here, but
it wouldn't be here. But my house.
Your house, yeah.
My house would be at least a little affected.
Yeah.
Work be screwed.
We'd be working up on the mezzanine.
The whole airport. Think about how close the airport is to the bay.
Oh, yeah.
If the bay rose 20 feet, I mean, but you're talking about all of the Great Lakes at that point raising 20 feet, basically.
We'd lose 20% of Michigan.
It was, you'd lose a lot.
It was crazy, too, driving my brother to the airport because we were in a flash flood warning while I was driving him down there.
Yeah. And you're like, hopefully not.
You look at the traffic going through, and there were points where I couldn't see anything because the rain was so heavy. And then there were points where the cars next to me are driving through huge puddles on the, and like the road was flooded. And so the water's washing up onto my windshield and I just can't see anything. And yeah, it was crazy. Or, you know, the freeway is, you know, six lanes, three going one way, three going the other. And those two center lanes of opposite traffic, they're just washing water back and forth onto each other over the center wall.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
You want to know what's crazy about that, too? And this is something that, like, rightfully so, I don't want to take away from the victims of the flooding, but something that most people probably don't think about is it's not just people who are affected in that flood. Think about all the wildlife that was affected in that flood. I mean, even birds.
Mm-hmm.
If the water rises 30 feet, if you have 30 feet of flooding, that's taking out all trees and whatever. Like, how many birds, how many deer, how many, you know, squirrels and foxes or anything? Like,
had to be a ton.
A deer's not surviving 30 feet of water flooding.
No.
You know what I mean? The same as a person wouldn't be able to.
It's not like you can't, you know, outrun it or get in your car and drive away. You know, it's like,
yeah. Run downstairs and grab your scuba tank, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just... those types of things, like natural disasters, it's like the repercussions of something like that, just like the aftermath, wild, dude. Just wild.
Yeah.
Like the hurricanes we had this year, even. Mm-hmm. It's just terrible.
So, and then another thing, we were... because it all happened on 4th of July. So we had plans, because my brother was down here visiting. We had plans to go float the San Marcos River.
Right.
And we're like, I don't know, the rain kind of... Originally, we're like, well, our tickets aren't refundable. We're going in the rain. You know, whatever. And then we end up calling the place, and we're like, oh, yeah, we'll refund them. So we ended up going. And I don't think San Marcos really flooded that much, but still... I think it was one of the rivers that flooded a little bit, and it would have been quite the tubing trip.
I mean, Jared, you've floated the Platte in Michigan, haven't you?
Yeah, Platte's nice. It's a little bit slower river, in my opinion. Me and my buddies used to do a yearly kayak trip. We've gone on the Betsy, the Pine. The Boardman is actually a blast if you don't take out your kayak where you're supposed to, and you go down, there's... like the easy takeout spot, and then there's a spot where you go through a bunch of rapids.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You can take out after that, and those rapids are a lot of fun. Kind of a funny story. My buddy's dad was always kind of in charge of these trips, and he stops us at the easy takeout spot, and he goes, all right, we're about to, you know, go into some of the rougher spots. Can't be screwing around as much through here. You know, you guys have been having fun and whatnot, but we got to be a little bit more serious now. And so he's like, all right, we got to go through these culverts, and then we'll start getting into the rapids. And the one dude, one of my friends, he goes up to the culverts, and we're like, we're messing with him. And then we let him go. He had plenty of time to get into one of the culverts, but he ended up just like hitting right in the middle between the two. His kayak got pinned, flooded with water.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was funny. He had to walk it through, take it up on shore, drain it all. It was funny. But his dad was pissed. But
so imagine even like something like the Platte, which like you said is a pretty easy, like that's, you float that river and you're just drinking basically, you know, just having a good time.
Yeah.
Imagine that, but even like 4 foot of water, just 4 feet higher, completely different. Like you can't float it at that point. You're just running into trees and everything.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is when you get that much water flowing around, everything picks up in speed as well.
Right. And well, and then it's taking out more trees and everything. You don't know what you're going to run into.
Yep.
I don't know. Wild. But good that you guys are safe and not, you know, don't have anything crazy going on as far as your house is not flooded with water.
Yeah. So we ended up, instead of floating the river, we went and checked out the Texas Ranger Museum. That was pretty cool. A lot of old guns in there.
Yeah, sounds cool.
Rangers like to carry 1911s.
Really?
Really fancy 1911s. I don't think that's really what they carry when they're working. It's more for like events. But
yeah,
they're really fancy. Like,
it's like the government model 1911 from World War II, the stainless and walnut or whatever.
Mm-hmm. No, they're cool. Like they got
all their engraving and stuff. Oh, yeah.
They got tons of engraving, custom. They'll have, like, the Texas Ranger badge placed onto the handle. Some of them had bull horns and stuff carved into pearl grips.
That's cool.
A lot of them had solid pearl grips. There is, I mean, just insane how fancy some of them were. And there were tons of them.
The Texas Rangers saved Colt firearms. Like, we wouldn't have the 1911 if it wasn't for the Texas Rangers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Really?
Yeah. In 1836, Samuel Colt made the Colt Colt Patterson, which was like the first repeating revolver that was actually successful as a cap and ball, the first cap and ball revolver. And 1836 in the United States was kind of a peacetime. There, you know, War of 1812 was over. And we hadn't yet started the Civil War, so it was kind of just peacetime. Nobody's really buying firearms. And so he was selling the 6-inch variant to people in like cities to protect themselves and whatnot, but the gun was so expensive there wasn't a lot of people buying it because it was a peaceful time. And the only place that wasn't very peaceful was areas like Texas, where the Texas Rangers were constantly fighting off the Comanches. And so I don't know what they would be called, I don't remember, but like the leader of the Comanches or of the Texas Rangers ordered, I want to say 10 of the Pattersons, the 9-inch variant, which became known as the Texas Patterson. So 9-inch.
I was going to say they had some on display that you could pick up.
Oh, that's cool.
That had, you know, that I think they were the 9-inch version, and they were like 4 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. You pick it up and you hold it out like you're aiming it. It's insane. I can't imagine sitting there trying to aim that thing.
If anyone's ever curious, you should look up like a firing video of the Colt Patterson, because it's pretty ridiculous what they had to go through just to load the thing or to reload it. It was not as simple as throwing bullets in a magazine and then reloading your magazine. Like it's pretty intense. You got to take a screw out, pound out a wedge. You got to take the barrel completely off, take the cylinder out, grab another separate tool, you know, take the cylinder out, clean all the nipples off for where the caps were at, because they still get like broken. Sometimes they fly off, whatever. Yeah. But if they're still there, you got to take all those off, put the cylinder back on the frame of the gun, because where the barrel attaches, there's another little slot where you grab this like lever wedge. And so you know, you pour in your powder. Now people use wads, but they used to use like bacon grease or pig fat and stuff like that to lubricate everything. Put that in there. You got like a little lever ramrod for all of your balls that go into it. And it's either a 28 or a 36 caliber revolver. And so once you get all of that loaded, then you slip your barrel back on, pound your wedge back in, and then put your screw back on. So it probably takes someone who's proficient at it, it probably takes them 10 minutes to reload this thing.
It's crazy.
And it's ridiculous. So, but anyway, the guy who is in charge, you know, like the the captain or whatever of the Texas Rangers orders 10 of these and gives two each to the Rangers that were using them. They go out to fight the Comanches. The Rangers all fire once. The Comanches think that they're out of ammo and they have to reload, so the Comanches charge, and then they unload, you know, another four shots after that, or if you have two, whatever, right? Because the Texas Patterson, or the Colt Patterson only holds five shots. And a lot of times they would load four out of the five cylinders. You're carrying it on an empty chamber, mm-hmm. but they call it cowboy loading, where you load right. all of them. Super, super dangerous with the old style guns. The newer ones have a separate action, so the hammer in its resting position, if you don't fire it, will land between two cylinder, or, you know, two of the chambers.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit safer. But then they really liked it so much, Colt started arming other forces, other police forces, more to the Rangers, and then eventually to the military. And that's kind of how he got involved with everything. Then, obviously, the Civil War starts, and you get the 1851 Navy, the 1858 Army from Remington, and the 1861 New Model Army from Colt.
Yeah, they had a couple of the Navy models, and they had a lot of the single action armies there as well.
Yeah, so then you have a 72 single action army. Mm-hmm. I think it's 72. Which, of course, like, who doesn't like a single action army? It's like probably the coolest cowboy gun that exists.
It is the cowboy gun.
Yeah. There were some really ugly ones that were probably the early model ones that you were talking about. I guess I was sitting there reading like every little detail, and some people I was with were getting fed up, mainly Justin. But
I'm actually going to
send you every single detail. I'm like, yeah, it's guns.
I'll send you a picture of a Colt Patterson, Jared, and you can tell me if you saw it there. It's a really weird looking gun because
I don't really like the look of them.
Well, it has a folding trigger and no trigger guard, and yeah, so
that's the one that we get to pick up.
Yeah, so that's
the one you were describing that you take it all apart.
That's, well, you have to take even the 1851 Navy. They have loading levers on them, and some of the later model Pattersons also had the loading arms underneath the barrel. But the earliest model, like this is I'll send it to the group chat. This is a 1836 model Texas Patterson.
I just looked up Colt Patterson on Google.
Yeah.
And one of the suggested, like, people also ask is, did the Colt Patterson have a trigger?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is the one that we got to pick up.
No, you just shake it. It's like you just shake it to make it go off.
They had,
well, if you just pulled the hammer back and let go of it, it would cycle the cylinder. And
oh, that's true.
If there was no sear to it.
Did that be fucking wild?
So they had three of those that you could pick up and just kind of carry. I think they had slight differences. Like a lot of them were broken in some way or another. But then they had one that was all taken apart, and you had to sit there and figure out how to put it back together.
See, I want to do that because I know I could put it back together. That would be sweet.
Yeah.
Well, that would be sweet.
Come to Texas, buddy. And we'll go check it out.
Okay. I am coming. We need to do that. Like 100, I'm 100% serious. We need to do that.
There's a lot of cool.
They said that it's really difficult to cock the gun because there's no, and this is something I never thought about, there's no trigger guard on the Patterson. So for you to pull the hammer back, you don't have anything to leverage your hand against. So you almost have to use two hands to cock the hammer anyway, which I think is a really interesting concept. Don't you think? I mean, it makes sense, though. It would be difficult because there's nothing for you to
leverage. I never thought about that.
And the trigger has to come down, so you can't be way up on top of the gun, you know, underneath it.
Hmm.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Old guns, I mean, dude, did they have like old school, like Henry and Marlin lever actions there, too?
They had some. There was a lot of Winchesters there.
That makes sense.
They had Hamer's semi-automatic or fully automatic guns. The one was a fully automatic 30-06.
Oh my god.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's insane.
And they have pictures of the car, like Bonnie and Clyde's car.
Yeah.
And you look at the holes, it's like, yep, checks out.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of that. That's wild.
A full auto 30-06 is insane.
Yeah, that's insane. You know what I want a full auto of? I want like a full auto Gatling gun chambered in like 22 mag. I think that'd be so much fun because it's not going to kick hard.
Right.
Like 22 long rifle is probably not a reliable enough round. You know what I'm saying? Not that 22 mag's the most reliable.
Or like 17 HMR.
17 HMR would be cool. I don't know. Even 223, if you want like a center fire, just do. I think it'd be so cool.
You know how expensive that would be to shoot?
For 223, yeah. 223, yeah, 100%. 22 mag wouldn't be... Obviously, 22 long rifle, not that bad. 22 mag would be still pretty affordable.
22 long rifle, you get like six shots, dud.
Jams, yeah.
Jam, gotta clear it.
Ding, 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 ding. Click, 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 click. Ding, 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 click. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
It'd be funny.
It'd be really cool, though. Even if one in 30 shots was a dud, it'd still be fun to shoot, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I've never shot full auto. Have you guys?
I haven't. I've
full auto like airsoft guns and BB guns.
There was a spot in Florida when I went that was like a range that was like advertising. You can go shoot full auto.
Yeah.
I was like, that'd be kind of cool, but it was expensive.
I'd love to shoot like a Tommy gun or something. I think that'd be cool. Which you can buy Tommy guns now, but they're all semi-auto. So.
Right. I don't know.
Jared Brooks probably shot full auto, hasn't she?
Yeah, obviously.
I don't know. Have you ever done it?
Me?
Yeah, have you ever shot anything full auto?
No, I wish. I had an opportunity to, but passed it up.
It's like that in a 50 cal. Like, I don't care what I have going on. If someone's like, hey, you want to shoot a 50 cal? It's like, yeah.
I had the opportunity to do that, and I just never made it happen. One of my buddies, his like boss or something, had a Barrett.
Yeah, that's what you think, like $5 to shoot it or something like that.
And like, I just never.
I'd have handed him $20. Here you go.
Right.
Do, 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 do.
It'd be fun.
Yeah. Seems pretty legit. Oh, yeah, I just got some pictures.
Sent you some stuff from the Ranger Museum. I think that one on top is the. Oh, no. Yeah, that's the 30-06.
Oh, my gosh, dude. It's called the. The Colt Monitor Machine Gun, 1931. I'll just read the little plaque here. It says, this Colt automatic machine rifle, R80, also known as the Colt Monitor, was owned by a Texas Ranger, Frank Hammer. The Colt Monitor is a civilian version of the military Browning automatic rifle, or BAR, one of which is thought to have been used by the Dallas County Deputy Sheriff Ted Hilton at the ambush. That's really cool. Look at this.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those before.
Did you get sent the picture?
No. Oh, what the fuck? I mean, what the heck?
Oh, are these... This is Bonnie and Clyde's actual guns?
The ones on the left, the full auto ones were from Frank Hamer, I'm pretty sure.
Wasn't the BAR...
That's pretty cool.
...fully auto?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. This is the civilian version.
He went
the Colt Monitor is the civilian version.
If you watch
but it's
the
still
movie,
fully auto?
Yeah. If you watch the movie,
it's 1931.
Sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they had you could just go out and buy this shit. If you watch
at the a
movie,
Kmart.
Yeah, if you watch the movie, I'm not sure how like accurate it is, but Frank Hamer literally walks into a gun store and is just like, yeah, let me look at this, 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 and this. And the guy's like, well, which one do you want? He's like, all of them.
I'll take them all.
What's that movie called? I want to see that movie. I've seen Highway a couple of clips of it. Is that it? I've seen a couple clips, and I'm like, that looks good.
Kevin Costner plays Frank Hamer.
Yeah.
My brother just sent me a text. He says, Ready or Not is coming to console on July 15th. If you don't know what it is, look it up. Looks fun as fuck.
What is it?
It's like a... Like... I don't even know how to explain it. Like, you know, like GTA... Where it's like free roam or whatever, like there's not really like a mission or just look it up on your phone. It's a pretty crazy, like, I don't know. I guess I don't know how to explain it. I'm gonna look up a description. It's a tactical first person shooter developed by Void Interactive. So it's like GTA, but you're like clearing buildings, and it's like a I saw one clip of this guy was like a, it's like a cop simulator. So he's like goes into this house and he's like, get on the ground, whatever. And this guy like comes charging at him with a shotgun. It's crazy, dude. I'd be sitting there with a 145 heart rate, just playing video games, hyped up about this.
15th of July.
Yeah, which is Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Are you going to call into work that day?
No, but I probably will download it. Maybe not, though, because my freaking debit card got hacked. So there's that. For anyone listening, this is your official warning. Do not order things from the TikTok shop. Sometimes it works out, and sometimes your debit card gets hacked and people try to spend like $700.
I think you came in with a different story every day of things that you bought. It's like you went on the...
No, it was like there was like three different things, but it was $40 worth of stuff.
Right, but you went on a little spree of TikTok shop.
Yeah.
Stuff.
For like a week.
Yeah.
I was buying like...
I was like, dude, I got this flashlight last night.
Yeah. $12 flashlight. I spent like $1.94 on those stickers.
Yeah.
I bought that flag, you know. Some of it was from a U.S. like owned company that just was selling, because it's like Amazon, where like pretty much anyone can list their stuff on their shopping space, whatever. And so some of it was a U.S. company, but they were just selling it on TikTok. And then I think like the actual like really nasty Chinese products, they were trying to steal my stuff. Which makes sense. I'm pretty sure, like, when I called the lady at the bank, she's like, this looks like it's from a restaurant or something like that. And so, you know, communism, you don't have a whole lot of food. I get it. You're trying to get some money so you can eat, but it's also not your money. So get fucked.
Get your own money.
Yeah. Immigrate legally to America, and then we can have a conversation. Communism sucks. This episode of Nox Nature, we're going to be talking about everything communism did well. All right. I think we about covered it, guys. Yeah. Did you see that on the Unsub podcast?
Yeah.
That was funny.
That was funny.
Oh, that was, yeah, because it was a fat electrician thing. He's like, today's episode, quack bang out. I was like, all right. Exactly. Exactly, dude. It's awesome. Oh. So let's get back to deer hunting here for a second.
Oh, I got one more thing.
Go ahead.
And I won't derail our conversation anymore after this. That's what I'm here for. But,
you're good.
The other thing that we did, we went to rodeo finally.
Oh yeah.
Like actual rodeo, not the showcase that you and I went to. So that was fun. It was unfortunate. A lot of the riders kind of sucked, but
really,
yeah, the barrel racers were funny. Like, it's a really cool event to watch. Like, it's Brooke and I were talking, like, it's most people's favorite events are watching the barrel racing because it's fast paced, it's action. They're moving around.
I like, you know, team roping.
But it was funny because I think there was only like two or three barrel racers that didn't knock over the barrels.
Oh, that's wild, dude.
I saw a girl in Kalkaska practicing barrel racing. I was just driving down the road, and she's like on the side of the road, whipping around barrels.
Probably for the fair.
Yeah. I was like, huh.
I will say this, dude.
If you knock over a barrel, it's like it adds 5 seconds. So, you know, you get a bunch of people doing 16, 15-second runs, and then you add 5 seconds here. The one chick, she got a decent time, but she knocked over all three barrels.
No, well then she sucks.
Yeah. team roping was decent. Let's see. Oh,
there's just something so cool about throwing
riding
a rope.
Was freaking sweet.
Yeah,
way
I will say
than bull riding.
I will say I like when we were watching bull riding, like it was pretty cool, but it was like, yeah, you know, like this is something fun, it's something different. I could watch like televised bronc riding. It's wild, dude. Because a horse is jumping, a bull's gonna throw you up high in the air because the bull gets like completely vertical. But the horse is like jumping,
right?
Like it's just fucking wild, dude. Craziness.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I don't know. The rodeo stuff's cool. And I will say this, like for the Northwest Michigan Fair or whatever that's called.
Yeah.
Right? Even though that's like, we don't have like professional bull riders out here and like whatever, but just if you go to that rodeo, like it's entertaining. It's really cool to see local people that like are doing a pretty good job. Like it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I went to the one here in Kalkaska a couple years ago.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun. It was a fun afternoon.
Yeah.
You know, something different.
Right. It's better than sitting at home and just like watching movies all the time.
Yeah.
Like it's, that stuff's cool. So
me and Colt went, he put on his, Toy Story cowboy boots and
hell yeah.
he got like Woody.
Yeah. He has Woody cowboy boots.
That's awesome.
Or he did. They don't fit him anymore, but he had a little cowboy hat. It was cool.
That's cool. I did see the Minecraft sunglasses sitting on the railing.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
like, oh, those are obviously Justin's.
Yeah. My name is Steve.
Yeah, that's a good time, dude. Yeah. I guess I wanted to get back to the deer hunting portion. There is, and I don't know, maybe we'll do a video on it. I know I showed you those climbing sticks. There's a really cool set of climbing sticks that I think I'm going to bite the bullet on.
I don't remember what they were.
They are made by, I believe it's called Arsenal. I think it's called the Arsenal Assault Stick. I think so. Maybe I'm a dumbass. It is the stick weighs 1.2 or 1.3 pounds. So pretty light.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit heavier than the tethered one stick. But the stick extends from 13 to 21 inches.
Oh, it's telescopic. Yeah, it's the telescoping ones.
And when you fold them down, like when it's in its smallest version, the entire stick, top to bottom, is wrapped in cork. So it's really quiet.
Hmm.
And it's not rubber. So when it gets wet, you know, cork when it's wet, unless it's like super saturated, like from like wine or something like that. But like in the rain, or if you're fishing and you have like a cork handle on your fishing rod, you still have a good grip on things.
Right.
It's not as slippery as like rubber would be. And then it has magnets, like really strong magnets to index when they lock together, and they pack down into this little package that weighs like 5 pounds and it's only 13 inches wide. But then when you extend the stick, you have a 21 inch step. Or 20-inch step or something like that.
Hmm.
So it's like, dude, right now I'm running 10 pounds worth of sticks. You know, those Skeletor sticks from Tethered are advertised as 5 pounds, or sorry, 2 pounds a piece. And so it's 8 pounds, I guess, worth of sticks. So I would cut 3 pounds off. And then the Skeletor sticks are only an 18-inch step versus a 21-inch step. And they had it like, you'd think, that was my initial reaction. I'm like, okay, telescopic stick, like it's going to be wobbly as hell. No. Dude, as soon as it's on a tree and it takes that little bit of play that they have, it takes it right out.
Hmm.
Things are rock solid.
That's interesting.
So I'm like, they're expensive as fuck.
Really?
Yeah, they're like, I think they're $350 for a set of three.
Ooh.
And then I'd have to buy a fourth one because wow. I will not run Aiders. Don't like them. I think it's dangerous. You've just got like this string, even like the step Aiders.
Mm-hmm.
It's like climbing a rope ladder. It's like, man, you slip, something happens, you go to fall, you get caught by your one leg. Like, I don't like the idea of that. I'd rather just have an extra stick, you know, in this case, an extra pound. For one extra stick.
Right.
And with a 21-inch step and four sticks, I'm easily... 21-inch step, four sticks, plus my platform, easily getting to probably 20, 21 feet.
Yeah.
I mean, I can get 18 feet no problem right now with the Skeletors, and that's a 18-inch step and, you know, with the platform or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can get 10 with three. 10, 12 feet easily with just three sticks.
Yeah.
So... I think it's really cool. I'm super pumped for it. And the cork it's not something I would normally think about, but it's also like naturally camouflaged because it's got a bunch of browns and, you know, light browns, dark browns, blacks, grays, whatever, just kind of mixed into it. It's going to blend right into the tree, you know, and the rest of it's a black stick, but like Skeletor sticks, brown and green, you know, or orange, you know, it's got like orangish brown, whatever. But I think it's really cool. I don't know.
I just had an idea for sticks.
Was it what we already did? Oh, we're going to talk about it later?
No, yeah, we're talking about it later.
Okay. But I'm trying to get my setup as light as possible this year without sacrificing certain things. I'm not going to spend $350 on Tethered's carbon platform to save half a pound.
Right.
So I'm going to run the standard Tethered Predator platform because it's the lightest one that they offer that's not going to like totally break the bank. And it's not super big. Still comfortable for me. It works, whatever. I wish it was a little bit bigger. You know, maybe I could, I'd go to like the Predator XL or something like that. But I like the Lone Wolf hybrid portion. I don't like the fact that it's super expensive.
Yeah.
And it's super heavy for what it is. That stand itself weighs 5 pounds. My platform's like 2.
Right.
So now the Tethered stuff is cast. The Lone Wolf stuff is machined. So you can argue that the Lone Wolf stuff is a lot higher quality, which I would agree with to an extent. You know, casting's always going to be a little rougher than a machined piece.
Right. But is it worth it for you?
Right. And so I just want to get everything dialed in, super lightweight stuff. I'm no longer going to go with a screw and bow hook. I'm going to use the one that's just a strap that goes around the tree, and then it's just a short little bow.
I've never used a bow hook. I just hold my bow.
Well, you're in a hang on.
Yeah.
You can't hold onto your bow in a saddle and maneuver around. And like
that's true.
With the bow spider, you can, but I'm kind of pissed off with that thing right now because there's not a normal bow spider spot on my bow because it's so short.
Oh, right.
So I'd have to run the sight mount one and run on my hip, which is like, it would be effective, but it's hanging right down there and everything. And I'm like, I don't know if I want that much movement.
Especially when you're a tree.
Right. I'd rather just reach out in front of me, pull it off the hook, and then all I need to do is swivel to where I need for the deer instead of bring that whole thing up for my hip. I don't know. Maybe it's not that different, but yeah, Tethered has one that you go, it goes around the tree and there's just like a short little hook. So it's not way out there.
Yeah.
Right now I have like a screw in arm that gets it way out, but it'll actually make it easier for filming if the bow's tighter to the tree.
Yeah.
So whatever, they got that. It's like one strap and it'll have my bow on one side and it'll have the backpack on the other. Mm-hmm. But I want my hunting setup to be sub 30 pounds for the whole thing.
That'd be pretty good.
Yeah. So it'd be platform, sticks, the saddle itself with the ropes and everything. You know, camera arm, camera, any calls or extra layers and stuff, knives, things like that. You know, whatever, kill kit. That's it, stuff I keep in there. Pro tip for people listening. When you are going into... you're going to put together a kill kit for your hunting setup. I realistically have 3 things. There's 4 things in my kill kit. I really only use 3 of them. A good sharp knife. 1 good sharp knife. I know a lot of guys that will run, they have like a razor type of knife, like an outdoor edge replaceable razor knife to get through the hide. And they have like a paring knife to cut all the other stuff up. They have a fillet knife, a bone saw. I like the bone saw, but I don't necessarily need it. I cut the pelvis away. Oh. Jared and I do that the same way. Hmm. Just makes it easier to get around the bladder. You don't have to be as precise.
Yeah. I like to hang them from that.
Yeah, I hang them from the legs, like we talked about, behind the tendon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I usually have a good sharp knife, a bone saw if you want it, but like I said, sometimes most of the time I'm not using that. Zip ties, and then the scent-free wipes from like Scent Killer or whatever. And it's not because...
Why scent-free?
I'm going to explain that. It's not because it's going to eliminate all of your scent in the woods and everything like that. But when you shoot a deer, you can wipe your hands off with like a wet wipe, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have the like super smell good, you know, whatever to it. It doesn't smell like a Clorox wipe or it's like lemony or whatever.
Right.
So what I do, those are not disinfectant wipes. So I use those wet wipes basically as if I was just running my hands under water to get the blood off. Mm-hmm. And then I'll use like, I always have hand sanitizer in my truck. So I use hand sanitizer to like actually clean my hands in case I got like blood and guts and shit on my hands. But if you have the scent-free wipes in with your kill kit, if you start to get sweaty or you just want to like cool yourself off, if you get like dirt on your face or something like that, you can use a wet wipe and clean your face off. And it has that scent eliminating, whatever, but it also doesn't smell like anything. So even if it's not eliminating your sweat and making you smelly,
right?
You know, whatever, and like or making you scent free, it also isn't making you smell like lemons, you know, or whatever. It's not making you smell like a Clorox wipe.
Yeah.
That's my recommendation, is to go with something like that. And they're pretty cheap. It's like $5 or something like that for the pack, maybe yeah, 10.
You could probably get them at freaking Meijer.
You can. Yeah. And that's why I love them, because they clean up and they fold out pretty big. So they'll clean up your hands. You can, I mean, you saw early antlerless, I had my hands, you know, covered up to my shoulders basically in blood after three deer. I bet you I could have done that with two wipes.
Hmm. So I've just always used regular baby wipes.
And that would work too, because most of the time they're not like a super heavy scent.
Right.
So that's probably a cheaper option.
They are scented a little bit, but not.
These ones are biodegradable too.
Oh,
the specific ones that I had. I don't think all of the Scent Killer ones are. These aren't Scent Killer. I think these are Dead Downwind, but it's basically the same type of shit.
Yeah, right.
And so I think that it's just like a little hack right there. But if I can have all of that stuff, you know, pack and frame, the manimal's pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to get away with not running the cinch this year because it was just extra out the back, you know, super heavy. Or super heavy, super bulky.
Yeah.
So if I can just have like my sticks and platform just compression strapped to the outside of the pack, because I can like weave a compression strap through my platform, clip it, and it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's what I want to try to figure out, how to connect my stand to the Absaroka so I don't have to switch bags all the time.
I know why you bought that bag. It's a good deal, super big bag. It's like one of their more water resistant type of bags.
I bought it for backpacking.
Right. I'm a little bit worried about that material hunting wise with like platforms and stuff against it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously Kafaru stands by their stuff, and I asked the rep about it because it was like right after you bought that bag.
Yeah.
Last year at Tech. And I was like, hey dude, like, you know, what's up? And he's like, well, you know, you can't get waterproof entirely. But this is also a really tough material for what it is. It's not going to be like the Sika Dew Point, I think.
No, but it's way tougher than that. But it's not as tough as, you know, 500D Cordura.
Which is what the other stuff's made out of, yeah. Though I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked if you tore a Kafaru bag. Short of like cutting it with a knife.
Right.
But like on a branch or from having like your stand rubbing up against it, I just don't see it happening.
You won't. I mean, look at that bag that I have upstairs or whatever, that Quandary.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had that for 6-7 years.
And it's like Kevlar. It's insanely tough.
It looks brand new.
Yeah, minus the coffee stains or whatever.
Yeah, there might be a couple stains on it. But I've used that bag a shit ton.
Yeah. No, dude, I'll free advertise for Kafaru all day long. Not just because, like, this happens a lot where somebody will buy something and then they're like, oh, it's so great, like, whatever. And that's what we talked about with backpacks. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, well, is Justin saying Kafaru, they make that good of a backpack because it's that good, or because he spent a lot of money on one and he wants other people to buy it so he feels better about himself? No, dude, it's literally like, hey, I want you to spend the money on this pack because I fucking love it so much. It is the manimal. Dude, if I could just fit a full-size sleeping bag in the manimal, I would use that pack for fucking everything. It's insane. But I think I'm just going to, when I when I buy the ARC frame, I think I'm just going to buy also like a Hoodlum or something. Yeah. Something that's not as big as the Modus, but a little bit bigger than the Manimal.
Right.
Just so I can get a sleeping bag down in the bottom, and then that'll just be like my main pack for pretty much everything. The Manimal, and that's it's purpose built, you know, with Levi. It was designed for whitetail. It's a great whitetail pack, you know, overnight bag. You might be able to do like a 3-day thing with that pack if you hunted with, if your camp was set up, you had like a separate camp bag, or you were using like a hammock.
Yeah.
Where it's not super bulky and also lightweight.
I could do it with my setup, you know, my quilt and my tent, you know.
In the Absaroka or Absaroka
in the Manimal
or whatever.
Yeah. I could do a 3-day for sure. My tent, I mean, you can see my tent in that bin. It's
My tent will fit.
It's a little bit bigger.
It's a sleeping bag that won't.
Oh, really?
I cannot fit a sleeping bag sideways in that. And I can put it in there vertically, but then it takes up the entire top. Because I want the sleeping bag at the far bottom to get the heavy shit up a bit.
Got to get a quilt.
I want a quilt. I hate the mummy bag. I learned that the hard way in
that's
Utah.
My quilt's in that white bag.
You couldn't fit that in the Manimal.
No, it packs down to...
Oh, right. Yeah. That's,
you don't store
because that's down. Mm-hmm. Mine's, I don't worry about it because it's synthetic. So I just
whatever.
And it's maybe if I had like a extra, it's a long, my mummy bag's a long bag, right? Which was recommended to me. It's just like, hey,
you're tall.
I don't know. I'm not a super tall dude, but they're like, hey, the standard bags are designed to go up to 6 feet. You're 6 feet. You might want the long bag just to have a little bit more room.
Yeah.
It was still too short for me.
Oh, really?
And I have wide shoulders, and so maybe with a like extra long wide bag, it would be okay. That's kind of the purpose of the mummy bag, is to keep it close to you.
Yeah.
But it was just too much.
Really?
I had to force myself to just like lay here and be like, okay, I can sleep like this. Because I'm a sprawler. So when I sleep, I like to like stretch my arms out. I kind of starfish, you know? Or I'm on my side, but I don't like to have my legs stacked on top of each other. So I kind of like I don't even know how to explain it.
I'm definitely not a sprawler. I'm a.
You're a cozy up.
I'm a cozy up to myself.
I can't do that, dude. No, I want to like put my arm outside and like underneath the pillow. I'm that kind of drooling all over the place. Yeah. I don't know. The quilt makes sense though. I wish I would have known about that, especially because I had such a well-insulated sleeping pad.
Yeah.
My sleeping pad has an advertised R value of 8. I don't think that's legit. I think it's probably closer to 6.
Yeah.
But it was still plenty warm and 20 degrees. And super cool. I'd take that whole setup winter camping.
Nice.
It is a 0-degree bag, but it's a synthetic, cheap 0-degree bag. It's the Teton one.
Right.
And so if I was going to be in super cold, like 15 degree temperatures, I would probably take that 0-degree and put like a quilt over top of it or something.
Right. Or just sleep in your clothes.
Yeah, I could have done that too. I could have slept in that. That's what Jared did. He had like a 30-degree bag, and it was like 28 degrees or something like that. And he was sleeping in that Sitka.
Winter jackets.
Winter jacket. The Sitka. The Kelvin jacket.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And that jacket,
it was fun.
Jared, yes or no, that jacket's like one of the warmest jackets you've ever worn.
Yeah, as far as like a mid-layer, it was pretty nice.
It's not durable at all, as we found out on the ski hill, but whatever. I do think, I mean, I've had a lot of, like, obviously my Carhartt jackets, and I've had a lot of winter jackets. My dad has a North Face ski jacket from back in the day.
Yeah. Jared, are you going to come up here and go skiing this winter?
You know, I'd like to, but also like Colorado's kind of closer.
Yeah,
that's true.
That Sitka Fanatic jacket though is the warmest jacket I think I've ever used.
So we should do a midwinter. We should do a ski trip.
Everyone goes out to Colorado or like, I don't know. Montana's pretty fun, too.
Would we drive?
Probably.
I don't know if I want to try to check a snowboard.
Yeah, flying with that stuff is not. That don't.
That would suck.
You got to get like a padded bag and protect all that stuff because it'll get damaged.
Right.
That's like the bow spider guy. He told me on his bow case, he packs his bow in there and then he packs all his clothing around that and has like a duffel that like stuffs down, like a breakdown duffel so that he can unpack it after, whatever. But pack all your clothing around that, and then on the outside, it's obviously locked and everything, but it looks like a gun. So he has bow spider stickers on it all over the place, a sticker that says not a firearm, and then a whole bunch of camera, like fragile camera equipment, whatever. Yeah. Because I don't know if you've ever watched some of those videos of guys loading firearm-looking boxes onto planes, and they just...
Shock them.
It's like, oh, it's a hard Plano case. Let me just chuck this bitch up onto the belt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cool. Thanks, homie.
You know?
That's why I bought... I was... When I went to Texas, if I was taking my, like, a suitcase, there's like, yeah, you want a hard side suitcase.
Oh, yeah.
Or your shit's going to get fucked up.
I was watching them load some of those suitcases just from when they... The plane is completely full, and they don't have enough room for check bags anymore, and you gotta...
They're just throwing them in the top.
My bad. They don't have room for carry-ons anymore, so you gotta check your carry-on as you're walking out of the plane. And I'm watching them load them, and they're like... They throw them up on the belt, they miss, it topples off over the side, they just grab it and chuck it back up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a...
They're not gentle.
The last time I flew, I was flying home. I don't remember if it was in Colorado. Jesus. I don't remember if it was in Chicago or if it was from the Houston airport, but, I had my Oakley kitchen sink with me, mm-hmm. you know, which like, it's not like Jared, it's not like your leather duffel bag, you know, price wise, but like the kitchen sink from Oakley is like a $250 backpack, you know? And it was brand new at the time. Like, my brother had just got it for me for Christmas or whatever. And so I'm, like, walking onto the plane, and they're like, hey, do you want to, like, you can check that for free. You know, we're running out of carry-on space. And I'm like, this is my only bag, so unless you tell me I have to check it, it's staying up here with me. And they're like, are you sure? Like, it's completely free or whatever. I was like, there's no way I want this bag in the checked area.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, whatever. And then like literally what Jared was describing, I'm watching them like hand bags out the other plane down below, and they're dropping the bag out of the plane and someone's catching it underneath, and then they're walking it over, and it's like, you know, they put it on a cart, walk it over, and then load it there.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
I watched when I went to Florida. I have that red, I have like a red duffel bag. It's a bright red. It's actually an old Marlboro bag.
Hell yeah,
it's
dude.
It's bright red. And it's
Marlboro red.
They did the same thing. They ran out of, you know, check bags or, you know, carry-on space or whatever, so we checked them.
Yeah.
And
they just told me I had to keep it between my legs. I was like, okay.
But on the way back, you know, we went to Disney and shit, so I had, like, coffee mugs
in there. Oh, yeah.
And I, like, padded them in between my clothes and stuff
pint
or whatever.
And shit.
Yeah. But, yeah, I had, you know, a couple pint glasses, a couple coffee mugs, like, stuff like that.
With shot glasses, yeah.
And I watched the dude. I was watching. I was like, oh, they're loading bags, you know, on the plane. I'm just looking out the window. And I was like, oh, there's my bag. And he goes, they're all black. Most of them are gray, black, whatever. And I just saw the bright red one.
Yeah.
And the dude literally, like, hook shot it over his shoulder, like, and just tossed it. Like, he was just having fun. He was just throwing bags, and he's kind of, like, fucking around or whatever.
Did it get all fucked up?
No. Really? Nothing broke. But I, like, as soon as I saw that, I was like, dude, those things are done.
Yeah.
I was like, that sucks.
Yeah.
And then they were fine. And I was like, I don't know how that happened.
Got lucky.
I got lucky.
Yeah. I did. I saw one of those for sale on Marketplace the other day. It was like a 80s era. They were like circa 1980 Marlboro. It was like a 35 liter duffel bag or something.
That's
like
what mine is.
Giant. And I was like,
mine's not giant like that, but it's like the smaller version. But yeah, it's from the 80s probably. It's
bright red.
Mm-hmm.
Marlboro logo on the side.
It's got like a leather flap on it.
Yeah. That's and sweet. I'm like, why did they make this? But also, like, why do I kind of want to buy it?
Right.
Know? I don't smoke cigarettes, but, like, whatever, you know?
It's just cool, like, branding. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It was, like, if it was $30, I probably would have bought it. $50 maybe.
Yeah.
It was, they wanted like $170 for it. Ugh. I was like, man, fuck that.
Right. It'll be at Goodwill in 5 years.
Right. Dude, that's what sucks. Like, I remember being able to go to Goodwill and, like, I wear, like, those Wrangler brush poppers. I've got a couple of those, mm-hmm. like the Zach Top shirts.
Yeah.
You used to be able to find those at Goodwill, like, in similar styles, even, like, darker colors, like, you know, Pearl Snap, whatever. You used to be able to find those at Goodwill. And now people aren't taking them to Goodwill. They're taking them to a different resale shop because they're getting money because now it's, like, vintage, cool, you know, vintage Western, whatever. I'm like, fuck you, dude. This was my thing, and now you had to go fuck it up because it's a TikTok trend.
Yep.
Whatever. That'll be sick of gear in 20 years.
Did you see that you can, Wrangler is actually making those again?
Yeah, the one that I wear consistently is a new Wrangler brush popper. It's like a revamp.
Yeah, they're making those again. I was looking at them. They're like every single color is sold out.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened with mine. I bought it, and then I wanted to buy one of the other models, and as soon as I went to go do that, it was sold out. All of them were sold out.
Yep. I will say another cool Wrangler Pearl Snap that they got on there is they got a deal with Whataburger.
Oh, that's funny.
So they got a bunch of like Whataburger logos all over them and stuff. It's kind of cool.
The shirt I'm that my newer brush popper is the one you ripped off of my body in the club.
Yeah. I didn't rip it off. I just opened it.
You ripped it off half of my body.
I let the ladies see what's going on. You know, I'm your wingman.
Wingman? That was you pushed them all away.
Nah, they like that.
They're like, look at them fucking love handles, dude. Yeah. Oh, Jesus. That was a while ago. That was like in like February. Maybe not that long ago.
I think that was right before I left.
Yeah, I think you're right. So what, March, April maybe?
Yeah.
Well, whatever. Where do you think hunting clothing is going? Because like back, like Fred Bear hunted with a, you know, like, exactly. Yeah, he's wearing like the turtle camo or whatever they call that.
Yeah.
Or a flannel.
Turtle camo.
What is it called?
I have no idea.
Because it's like a Vietnam era or Korean War era fucking, I don't know.
Bear had their own pattern.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, it's like a Fred Bear pattern. I don't remember what they call
it. Like a, you know, whatever, puffy jacket, basically, mm-hmm. you know, and jeans a lot of times or whatever, you know. And then it got really popular to wear like all camo pants and face coverings, whatever. And now it's like still in that area, but like most of it's like a digital type of camo.
Yeah, I think it's trending back to solids too.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But I like the fact that everything's form-fitting now.
Oh,
for the most part. Like, higher-end gear is not bulky.
You know what someone should do?
But solids are the way to go.
If I owned a clothing company, hunting camo company, I would make it in flannel, like, patterns. Because it'd be cool. People would buy the shit out of that.
The flannel and blue jeans thing is weird because, like, deer see blue really well.
I want to do blue jeans, but...
So...
Get to wear like I wear.
I've hunted
red flannel and green wool pants.
I wore khaki colored pants out there. And these Wranglers too.
When you're talking about Wrangler, I was just looking up those online and their shorts and stuff.
The shorts are a little long for my liking.
Oh really?
They're like a 15-inch inseam. Like they'll go down to like past your knee. It's kind of weird.
It'd be weird.
But they're super nice. As far as, like, they're lightweight, they're cheap, dude. They're like $25 or $30. How much are they now?
$26, $27.
Yeah. And their pants, did you look at the pants too?
Yeah, they're $29.
They're, like I said, I bought three pair before I went to Utah, three or four pair. And they're fucking awesome. I will hunt in these pants this year because I do not like the Equinox pants. They get just like, they're tough, but I'm so tired of wearing. I was bitten by the bug, and now I just hate the elevated two camo pattern.
Yeah,
I think it looks fucking stupid.
It's dumb.
Even the new one is Optifade cover, and it's like, you know, it's got the green in it and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, just give me the blue. Just give me the solid color.
Yeah.
Just give me the solid color. Late season, Elevated 2 makes sense. It's a whitetail pattern. It's called Elevated 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be for tree stand hunting. It's not ground-based stuff, you know, whatever. I just like hunting with that. I don't know. Early season, it makes sense. They come out with a camo pattern that's mostly green, but then I'll just hunt with my hunt solids in green.
Right.
Every single piece of Sika gear I've bought since the beginning of 2024, I think, was all hunt solids. Ambient hoodie, the dew point. No, the dew point was 2022. Oh gosh, that was long. No, 23, something like that. I don't know. I think that actually the first piece of gear that I bought in solid color would have been the gradient hoodie, which is what they call the, what is it called now? The Traverse hoodie.
Is that what it is?
But I bought that right after TAC, right after my first TAC, which I think was 2022, I believe. But that,
you know what I thought about the other day? Is when we were talking about how long we were shooting bows for,
mm-hmm.
is I started heavily shooting bows in 2017.
That's when I did too.
Really?
Well, a little bit before that because I had that Hoyt, but when I was like really getting into building my own bows and shooting bows a lot, I bought my bow July 4th, 2017.
Really?
That's
when I picked the recurve back up. I mean, I always shot before that a little bit. You know, I'd dabble here and there, and I had a recurve the whole time. But when I really got into it, it was 2017.
Yeah. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Was that fall?
Yeah, I don't know. Trad archery is so fucking cool.
We're going to go shoot trad bows after this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Some more.
I've never really thought of it in this way, but like we've talked about, like it's not ethical. You got to practice with a trad bow a lot to like, you know, to go shoot a deer.
Yeah.
You got to be really confident. But like went out there and shot and like, what did I shoot? 6 arrows. And I had one that wouldn't have killed the deer.
Yeah.
Because it was a little high.
Right.
You know, a foot high. But like, dude, yeah. Sub 20 yards with a, especially my own recurve where I know mm-hmm. where it hits and everything. And I'm shooting your bow right now, but
yeah,
with my own recurve in hand, like I probably could ethically shoot a deer. I think I could do it.
Yeah, probably. If you had the right opportunity.
Yeah. I think the guys that are like really, really successful are the ones who can still have that confidence out to like 30 yards. And they get a deer at like 21. They don't freak out. They just put an arrow in it.
Right.
You know? And that was probably part of the other, like, when you took your shot on, was that, that was a doe or a spike with your trad bow?
They were both does.
Okay. When you took that shot, that was probably the first time you were shooting anything with a bow, right? You didn't try to shoot one with your compound before that.
Mm-mm. So that's the first time a deer. I've killed rabbits and squirrels before that, but
that was the first deer you tried to kill mm-hmm. with a bow. Period.
Yeah.
So there's probably some of that in there too. It probably wasn't just.
I was good enough to. Yeah, I was good enough to do it.
Yeah,
100%. Especially the first one. It was at 10 yards.
Yeah.
10 yards. I was in a tree stand. Like
just had the yips.
Yeah.
Yeah. Believe me, I know what that's like.
Yeah.
On a foam deer.
So, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the second one, I just didn't. I didn't stop it. I should have stopped it or something, because it was walking, and it was a poke. I was like 30 yards.
But you could have made that shot at that
time. Oh, yeah.
And that's where it comes.
I hit exactly where I was aiming. It's just the deer was not there anymore.
Yeah. That's, and I think we've talked about that before. It's like, that's really what it comes down to for being ethical with a trad bow. It's, yeah. You're not talking about the 12-yard shot. You're no. talking about the 30-yard shot.
Yeah, and arguably, you probably shouldn't take 30-yard shots at deer with a trad bow. I think that's the absolute max.
You're not getting a pass-through.
You could probably get a pass-through. I think you could get a pass-through for sure, depending on your arrow setup. It's just your arrow is so slow that there is so much stuff that can happen between when you release the string to when the arrow gets there.
When I think it was the push. One of the guys from the push, he sent me mm-hmm. like their stuff or whatever, and I watched one of they killed a buck. I think it was Kentucky. The guy shoots a nice, you know, like 120-inch 8-point or whatever.
Yeah.
30 yards. He releases the string. You hear the arrow or like the bow go off and the arrow start coming. The deer flinches because it hears the noise, looks his direction, and then about a second later, the arrow hits the deer, but it only went about halfway through it.
Right.
You know, and it was fine. Like, he, you know, great shot, whatever, mm-hmm. deer goes down. But I'm like, motherfucker, that deer could be gone by the time. Oh, yeah. Like, if it's looking at you, your direction.
Like, and there's, like your bow's pretty fast. You know, that's a fast recurve. You know, you start shooting some of that stuff, it's a little bit faster. But, like, my longbow,
which he was shooting a 600.
Yeah, shooting a 620 grain arrow.
Yeah.
That thing's moving slow.
30 yards. I mean, you're talking probably 3 seconds for that arrow to impact.
I don't know about that long, but it's...
At least two.
Yeah, maybe two.
That's a...
Because yeah, 3 seconds might even be if they low. Don't jump the string, if they're not... They can still just do whatever normal deer stuff. Like, they could yeah. turn 90 degrees.
Well, I calculated it one time. My dad and I were at 20 yards with a 300 grain... Or 20 yards with an arrow traveling 300 feet per second. The deer had like 0.6 seconds to react or something like that.
Yeah.
And they could still jump the string.
And you cut that in half.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, then you're shooting... yeah, right. Like 150. What's... A fast trad bow is probably $170.
Yeah, probably. We need to get a chronograph.
I am gonna get one because I want to know what the lift shoots.
Yeah,
but I would love.
I'd be curious also, when you bump up to 80 pounds. Like, what is the difference between 70 and 80 pounds?
I bet it's not much, to be honest. I bet it's like 15.
Yeah,
15. No,
it's probably more than that. But
because 5 pounds,
especially if you're shooting a heavier, like 15. It's gonna shoot a heavy aerial better. Like, you might not see the...
Well, shout out Chris B. That was something I never even thought about because I've experienced this. That's exactly what happened with the lift shooting those other arrows. I cut those arrows down from 30, whatever it was, 30 inches down to like 27 and three quarter, mm-hmm. 27 and a half or something like that. And then took... Instead of putting 50 grains on, I put 75 grain insert in there.
Yeah.
But I went from like 470 to 460 grains.
Mm-hmm.
And it was slightly slower, even though it was a slightly lighter arrow.
Yeah.
And he explained that as, well, if you get to a certain point with the lighter arrows, they become so flexible with a weaker spine that they're actually absorbing some of that energy instead of transferring it. And that it confuses me with that setup in particular because I'm shooting that bow and I shortened the arrow. It was the same exact arrows. I just shortened it. So it should have made the spine stiffer.
So like, then you added more point.
Is it too stiff? Right. Well, I added 15 grains.
Yeah.
But I took at least that off the front in carbon.
Right.
So I'm like, I added 25 grains, you know, but I took, like I said, I took at least that off the front in carbon because the total weight of the arrow went down by 10 grains.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what do you do in that situation? The only thing I can think of is I retuned the bow.
Right.
And so maybe in that tuning process, I did something with like where the cam is positioned because all I did was move it left to right tuning wise. So I guess like that was the, I was like, I don't know. Like, I tuned it, string settled, whatever.
And you know it's slower just based on your sight tape?
Just based on the sight tape.
Yeah.
By, like, 2 or 3 sight tapes. Mm-hmm. So, 5 feet per second, maybe, difference.
Yeah.
But still weird because it's a lighter arrow, you know? I mean, if you put if you shoot a 100 grain point in your bow and then you switch to a 125 grain point, you're going to shoot noticeably lower.
Yeah.
You use 150s mm-hmm. in your bow. If I put a 100 grain point in your bow, you're shooting at 20 yards.
Right.
And if I put a 100 grain point in one of your arrows, you're going to sail one over the target. It's going to shoot high.
I don't know if it'd be that much. I would think 3 inches, 4 inches maybe.
All right, maybe not 20 yards, 30 yards. I mean, dude, it's going to shoot a lot higher.
Yeah.
50 grains difference. Right. It's going to shoot a lot higher. But I don't know. It's just one of those things where I'm like, that's a hard one to wrap your head around because it's like I should be shooting a faster sight tape. You know, because I went from like 8 to 12 on the sight tapes.
Yeah.
Which also scares me. Because I'm like, okay, at one point, this bow at 70 pounds was at the number 8 sight tape. I think it was 8 or 9.
Yeah.
I'm going to bump this up by 10 pounds. Am I going to have a sight tape fast enough for that bow? You know, I might have to have a custom sight tape made.
Yeah. Huh. I didn't think about that.
I mean, Chris B did it. I don't know. He has a little bit shorter draw than I do, but
yeah.
What the fuck do you do? You know what I mean? Yeah,
figure it out.
And at that point, it's like, okay, I'd rather have a bow that's too fast for the sight and build a custom tape than too slow and build a custom tape.
Right.
Because that sucks. But whatever, I guess. There are companies that will just like print sight tapes like that.
Oh, yeah.
Ryan does it himself, prints it on paper, and then like just uses like packing tape, I think, or something. It's weird.
That seems like a lot of effort.
He's doing like 0.3 feet per second adjust. He's trying to get like a perfect sight tape. I don't put that much thought into it.
Yeah.
But when Ryan's dialed, he's dialed.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Like that, the apple.
Yeah,
he'd have hit that for sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when he's on, 100%. I'm trying to think of another shot. Like,
I'm still pissed. I didn't know we could shoot 2 arrows.
Would you have taken one?
Oh, for sure.
Because it wouldn't have counted for anything.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's just a bonus. It's just why not? I mean, besides you might break an arrow, but
I. Well, on that target, I actually shot really well, so maybe I would have hit it.
Yeah, I would have hit it. I would have nailed it. Guaranteed.
You shot low on that target. You shot under my arrow.
Yeah, maybe.
I still feel bad for Chance, dude. That sucked.
Oh,
brushing right on it. Fletchings literally hit the apple.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, whatever.
Yep.
Is what it is.
Anywho.
We've been getting going.
Yeah.
So
are we wrapping it up?
I think we're going to wrap things up.
You got bows to shoot.
We got bows to shoot and entire work week to get ready for. What do you think, Jared?
Yeah. I think it was a good episode.
Yeah. It was fun. Good conversation. A little history lesson, too.
Yeah.
It's cool. So we appreciate everyone for listening. If you've been around since episode 1, that's even cooler. So here's to another year. Hopefully we get better. Hopefully it gets cooler. But yeah, we got some fun stuff in the works. Things are slow. We're slow moving. We still have other responsibilities and everything. So we appreciate your patience with all that. But we'll definitely keep you updated. Instagram's the best place for those updates. KnoxNature_podcast on Instagram. KnoxNature on YouTube, TikTok. Did I miss anything? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Cool. So, yeah. appreciate everyone listening, and we will catch you in the next one.